Hard to believe, but we are at the halfway point. It is a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush. That means when you put away that work today, it's three down, just two more days to go with this work week. And it's the Sports Rush taking you home. Your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. We've got you connected on our Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. That's 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Coming up on the show today, we're packed with guests, including Bishop Dwenger head coach Jason Garrett, one of the coaches. And I know, Caleb, you explained that Jason Garrett was in the on-deck circle taking his swings and then got called back to the dugout by the manager. So when his turn came up to be at bat, and I'm using analogies here, but when his turn came up to be at bat during the Sports Rush special out at High School Football Media Days, he was tied up, and so we never got him on that special show. And so we're doing some catch-up. We've been playing a lot of the coaches we didn't have a chance to talk to, interviews that Shannon Griffith was able to complete. So we want you to get kind of a preview of every team that we can at least cover and what we were able to cover during High School Football Media Day. But one of the coaches we didn't have a chance to talk to that day was Jason Garrett, so he's joining us live coming up in about 15 minutes. Also, on the way this hour, Nate Atkins, Indy Star beat reporter for the Indianapolis Colts, will join us coming up at 4:35. Hour number two, it is our pleasure to return to the airwaves, the judge, Phil Hauck. The judge has gone through a health situation over the last 7-8 months, and quite honestly, we weren't sure if he was going to be able to do the Fighting Irish preview, but he's a trooper, and he has been able to get himself back to health and ready to go with another season of Fighting Irish preview. What did he say last year? 23 years? Is it 24 now, the 24th season of Fighting Irish preview this year?
I thought we were approaching 25. I might be wrong.
We'll have to ask. That's one of the questions we'll throw out there.
Or maybe this is 26. Because one of the years was like the, you know, the anniversary.
I didn't think he had his anniversary yet. I thought he had a special show. We'll see. We'll find out. You know, my memory. Do you find that since 2020, it's a lot harder to tell what happened last year, what happened 2 years ago? It seems like everything's blurred together somewhat. Is it just me?
Yeah, no, it feels like there was life in 2019 and early 2020, and I remember that better than I remember the last 2 years.
I mean, I could be suffering brain fog, so it could just be me. But anyway, good also to report. I know I talked about this when I was in Florida the day I left. My one son tested positive for COVID. The next day, my other son tested positive. The crazy thing was they had completely different symptoms, although we assumed they probably got it from each other because the one that tested positive on the day I left had had symptoms for a couple of days, but they had come and gone. You know, young guy, he had a really high spiked fever one night, and then he felt great. And for 2 days, he felt normal. And then all of a sudden, felt sick again. And so he decided to take one of those tests and came back positive. So he probably had it 2 or 3 days in the house. And somehow I didn't get it. My wife didn't get it. But my other son, not so lucky, he also ended up testing positive because the next day he ended up with like 101 something fever. Eventually it got over 102. He had terrible flu-like symptoms, but son number one had that one night where he had a spike fever for a couple of hours. I mean, it got up to 100, didn't like go crazy. And then he had some cold symptoms, basically sniffles, a little bit of a sore throat. He said it wasn't really all that sore, a little scratchy. And then he said the one day he coughed more than normal, but he said he really didn't feel all that bad. And within 3 or 4 days, he seemed to be back to normal. The second son had 4 days of flu, bad flu, and then had 3 or 4 days of being completely wiped out. And it took like 6 days before he ever really even was able to get out of bed and function in any kind of way. And so he was down for about 9 or 10 days. And the strange thing is son number one tested negative after about 5 days. He then tested negative. Son number two that had the flu symptoms, he tested positive for 11 days from the time he had his first test until The last positive test was 11 straight days. Finally, it was day 13 when he got the negative test because he skipped a day. He was tired because he was supposed to be taking a trip and he couldn't go on the trip with a positive. So he was waiting to try to get the negative. And he had actually felt okay for about 4 or 5 days. And finally, he's recovered. So it's good news that both sons, after about 3 days ago, both sons now fully recovered. So they are back to business down in Florida. Speaking of sons, also daughters, today, obviously, the first day of school, I didn't need any more of a reminder other than waking up and looking at Facebook and seeing all the photos of everybody's first day. A lot of photos. This is what you get to look forward to, Caleb. Apparently, it has become a social media mandate that everybody must post a first day of school photo. My kids were never very crazy about getting a first day of school photo. I think I only had like one child that enjoyed doing it. The others absolutely dreaded it. They tried to hide. Then they tried to run for the bus. I mean, I think, you know, 1 year I might have a first day of school photo of one of my kids, and all you see is his backside running to the bus because they did not like getting the first day of school photos. But today, where did school start today? Portman Community School, Southwest Community School. Was Northwest Allen also part of the list that started today? I don't keep track anymore since I don't have the kids in the school systems anymore.
I don't know about that one. I know, let's see what it would be. East Allen, I believe they also started as well.
That's right. I saw pictures of kids going to New Haven High School, so that would have been East Allen. So, yeah, most of the schools are getting started. So, you know, afternoon drives, that, you know, 3 o'clock drive out to the radio station takes a little longer now. It's a little faster during the summer when there's no buses. But as soon as I got to figure out the routes and the timing of the routes, because last year during the school year, there was one particular bus that came all the way down Hessenkassel and it stopped about every other house all the way down the street. And that would add almost 10 minutes to my ride in. So we'll see. And it's not like I get here at 2 o'clock. 46862 Parkview Sports Medicine text line. So I told you the other day I ended up having my own little YouTube video concert series because I got hooked on Heart. And I know a lot of our listeners grew up on Heart. Caleb, you're on the younger side of our demo, and apparently Heart didn't resonate with you because it was a little before your time. But I wanted to give everybody a taste of what got me hooked, because it's one of those things I would have never thought about going online and just going through the songs by heart. But then once I started, I couldn't stop because there was one great song after another. At least in my mind, they're great songs, because I think Heart is the most underrated band of the 1980s. And again, nobody yesterday proved me wrong. Nobody had another artist that they felt was better than Heart in the 80s. And I know, apparently, I refer to them as an 80s band, and they didn't, somebody took offense, one of our texters took offense to me labeling Heart as an 80s band because they actually began performing in the 60s and they had hits in the 70s. I get that, but yet they still, relative to other bands that had hits and songs on the radio in the 80s, Heart was one of the more dominant groups. So I thought, put together a real quick 60-second montage. So this is like condensing. This is like the Reader's Digest version of my Heart concert the other night. Okay, so there you go, Caleb. 8 songs from Heart. How many of those songs sounded somewhat familiar to you out of the 8?
2. I think it was the first 2.
Those are the 70s songs. So you really did not like what was considered hair bands of the 80s. Because I guess you would consider Heart a hair band. They had the big, poofy, curly hair.
Not music I would know or listen to.
So the first 2 songs, I do believe, were both released in the 70s. But, just for fun, I want to see if I've got anybody else that knows that music. If anybody can name the eight song titles in order that we just had as part of our little Heart montage, I will give you a pizza from Pizza Hut. If you can name all 8. Pizza from Pizza Hut. No clues. But you just heard the 8 songs. You probably can figure out what 8 songs they were, but can you get them in the order we just played them? 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. That's where you would text us your answer. 46862. But so that was what I got hooked on, listening to the full versions of those songs. So the Colts back at Westfield today. They're back in pads. We're going to be talking to Nate Atkins about observations from the Colts camp today as they prepare for Buffalo coming up this weekend. I'm seeing Buffalo as the odds-on favorite for the Super Bowl championship this year. Of course, they picked up Von Miller after... He was a rental for the Los Angeles Rams last year. So I guess, do you think, let's put it this way, how do you feel about Buffalo being the favorite? Vegas got it right. Vegas got it wrong. Is there anyone else you like better? Buffalo as the favorite to win the Super Bowl as of this moment.
I would still go with the Rams over
back to back.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since we've had a back to back.
I mean, it's a pretty stacked team. I get that it's tough to do, but I don't know how the Rams aren't the favorite.
Tommy back to back Brady. Last year, Buffalo and the Rams were my pick for the Super Bowl. And Buffalo let me down. Because I would have had the pick for the Super Bowl. I mean, I get it why Buffalo's the favorite. But because I think there's more competition in the NFC, I don't know what to expect from Green Bay. I would expect them to take a step back. But they still have Aaron Rodgers, and quarterback play is the name of the game in the NFL. They didn't lose a whole lot defensively. So you've got Tampa Bay, where they are minus Gronk. Did they end up losing the receiver? Is it Godwin? They lost Chris Godwin, didn't they? He was picked up by someone else?
I believe so.
I don't think he signed to return to Tampa Bay. But, Tampa Bay obviously has Tom Brady, so you have to consider Tampa Bay to be one of those teams that would be a favorite. If not Los Angeles, Green Bay, or Tampa Bay, what other team has a legitimate shot? Is it, dare I say, Dallas? Is there an NFC team? Because it seems like we're having a shift of power from the NFC to the AFC. Seems like the AFC has like 10, 11 teams that we could probably all see being in the playoffs. The NFC, it seems like there's only 3 or 4 that are legit top grade Super Bowl type contenders. I mean, do we have faith in Arizona, San Francisco, Los Garoppolo? I don't have any idea what to expect from Trey Lance out in San Francisco.
Those are the only 2 like teams that stick out as far as teams making a jump.
Maybe Baker Mayfield makes the difference in Carolina. But then maybe he doesn't. No, I'm just trying to think. How many teams do you think are legitimate Super Bowl contenders in the NFC? How about AFC? Buffalo, definitely. You have to include Cincinnati, right? Denver? I can't count them out. from being a legitimate contender to make the Super Bowl from the AFC. They now have Russell Wilson, and they already had a pretty dominant defense, young receivers. I still don't know about the Chargers. I'm not 100% convinced on Justin Herbert, and I don't know if the roster is complete enough in Los Angeles for the Chargers. Raiders, with Josh McDaniels as the coach. I don't know about the Super Bowl, though. But the Raiders weren't that far last year.
You're not going to mention Kansas City?
Kansas City, yeah. I'm kind of going through. I'm kind of circling around the country, aren't I? Yeah, because I'm doing this completely by memory without looking at the list. Of course the Colts. Why would we even have to ask? Of course the Colts. I can be as good a homer as anybody.
The Colts have to make the playoffs first in order to be a contender.
Yeah, for the Super Bowl. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I it wouldn't be the most shocking thing if the Colts... I mean, they went out, got a veteran quarterback who's been at the Super Bowl before. They went out and got a corner as a lockdown corner that's, what, been to the Super Bowl before.
Coming off a major injury and a quarterback who's pretty old. I will be shocked if they made the Super Bowl.
Are you the Debbie Downer today?
I'm just not the homer.
Wow. Just busting the mood terribly here today. All right, so 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rupp along with Caleb Hatch. Still coming up on the show, we talked to Nate Atkins about the Super Bowl-bound Indianapolis Colts. I kid, okay? Somebody texted and said, would you be shocked if the Colts made it to the Super Bowl? And Caleb and I have spent the entire commercial break basically debating on what level of shock we would have if the Colts made the Super Bowl. And I said, I would be surprised, but I would not be shocked. I mean, they're Jim Irsay is an owner that is going for it right now. You've got a number of holes that were plugged. You've got some Super Bowl experience. But it's not just easy as rolling the ball out there and saying, yep, going to the Super Bowl this year. We'll see. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Let's talk high school football because joining us right now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, one of the coaches we just couldn't quite connect with during our two-hour window when we were at High School Football Media Day. It is Bishop Dwenger head coach Jason Garrett. Coach, how are you?
Really good. Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Is this practice time? Are we pulling you from practice?
It is. You're getting me out. Yeah, thanks.
Oh my. Yeah, hopefully you're taking this call in the shade somewhere, sitting with a nice little bottle of Gatorade and relaxing.
They like it when I get away for a while.
Yeah, they're the ones that should be thanking me.
Yeah, right, exactly.
They're probably like, talk to him for a while. Talk to him for a long time.
Yeah, don't worry about hurrying back, yeah.
Well, Coach, let's talk about your team. And what you've got. Obviously, every year we expect Bishop Dwenger to be a team that can compete at the top of the SAC. How do you feel about what you've seen so far in practice and preparing for the season?
I feel really good about it. I think for us, for our coaching staff, I think overall our team, I think it always starts with culture for us. And I tell you, it's one of the closest groups, if not the closest group of young men we've ever had. And, that's always starts with your senior leadership. We've got another good, solid group of seniors, 28 of them. Several of them have had, Friday night experience in different capacities. And we've got a really good young group of guys, a few sophomores that are going to contribute. We even have a freshman. It happens very rarely, but is going to help us on the line, we think, at some level. And a real strong junior class. So, a lot of new faces, but we're a little bit bigger up front, more Dwenger-like as far as the line goes. And right now our defense is playing fast, and, we're executing on offense. Sam Campbell has, it's a place that he's always, we've always evaluated him as a strong candidate there, and we just needed him in so many other places. But he's looking really good, quarterback in the offense right now. So, we'll learn a lot more on Friday night. It's always an opportunity to get a lot of guys in and, look at some different things and continue to evaluate. And, for us, it's a 10-week process going through the regular season. So, but I like where we're at. I certainly love being around the guys. I got a great coaching staff. So things are real positive right now.
Well, and I was going to ask you, and you just kind of answered about offensive line. I was going to start with the line of scrimmage and work back because last year, if there was anything that probably was a bit of a surprise. It was after all those years of having so many great, and I mean great, offensive linemen and big offensive linemen, last year a smaller group. And it sounds like you've added some size and feel better about the guys you have up front.
Yeah, I mean, not to discredit those guys last year. I mean, we had a scrappy bunch, a gritty bunch. I mean, they fought to the end. We made it through the sectionals, and but at the end of the day, you know, it was a pretty good size difference once we got to the regionals, and a lot of moving parts through the season, guys getting injured and things. But yeah, this year, much more Dwenger like up front. Even, you know, the younger guys, size and length, which is always good to have. And, we've got a good solid 8 to 10 guys that are continuing to be evaluated in terms of who will be starting up front. I mean, that's a great problem to have. It's one that we haven't had in a while in terms of those kinds of numbers that can be out there on Friday night. So, like I said, you know, tonight we're going full, and we're going to do some evaluation tonight. And then obviously Friday at the scrimmage will tell us a lot against Carroll, which is, you know, they're such a great opponent and great size. So we'll see where we're at.
Of course, a lot of those times when you have smaller guys in the offensive line, I think on any given night they can win a matchup against a much bigger player, but it's the grind of going through 9-10 games playing against bigger players. I mean, it just wears you down. I mean, it's not an easy schedule to begin with. Coach, let's talk about running backs, because it seems like that is one area you've had quite a big room, a lot of running backs, and I think about 8 of them were Tippmanns. What's it like this year?
Well, nothing changes. Expect a lot of Tippmanns, so you'll just have to learn some first names. You know, right now, Trent and Toby Tippmann are doing a great job in the backfield for us. Obviously, we got Teddy Steele and, C.J. Davis, Carter Minnick, some guys that we can mix in there position-wise that give us some different things, you know, from a running back, whether it's single back or kind of a dual back set. So we like that. Quinn Grant's been doing a good job back there. So we got a good mix of speed and size. We try to utilize as many guys as we can, and that's that effort of staying, that focus of staying healthy, you know, for when it really counts into the postseason. So another litany of Tippmanns, absolutely. we'll get those first names to you as we roll forward.
There we go. This is Coach Jason Garrett, Bishop Dwenger football coach, joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And, when you talk about the Bishop Dwenger system, and I don't know if there's a system that you use that's consistent year to year and guys are molded into that system, or if it goes the other way where you have to adjust to a system. But you get an opportunity to kind of have a feel, maybe 5-6 years out, what type of players you're going to have. How consistent year to year is what you do offensively as far as match it? You know, do you do the same thing or do you match up to personnel?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think here with our great feeder school system and the jobs that those coaches do, and, you know, again, the culture of football here at Bishop Dwenger that's been established over the years that, you know, we're trying not to mess up. there is a certain expectation that, you know, somewhere in the mix there you've got a form of or you know, you're a power running, you know, offense, and you play action and do some things off of that. You know, I think, you know, given who's that quarterback and some of that skill set, you know, the Mikey Fiacable of old in 2013, we don't necessarily have that guy that was running that kind of triple option, you know, in the grade school years. We've got guys that, you know, can certainly run and are mobile that we can roll out, and then we've got some guys in the mix that are kind of more of your pro style drop back kind of guy. So we do mold it to those guys. I think that's the thing that you're always looking to do as a coach. It's kind of hard just to have a system and fit everybody to it year in and year out at the high school level. We're not recruiting. We're not bringing guys in, you know, like they are at other levels. So, yeah, I mean, I think we mold it as much as possible, but there is an expectation in the stands and otherwise that, you know, we're going to run the ball. We got to go power at you, and we're going to play football in the trenches, and then use some other things to hopefully be successful.
You mentioned defense built on speed.
Amen to that. That's where everything starts for us. So, you know, we roughly look at about, you know, 15, 20, 22 guys, our best athletes, most physical guys, Those are the familiar names that year in and year out go through Bishop Winger High School. Their dads have played, grandfathers have played. That's where it all starts. You know, that's the Fred Tone history of Bishop Winger football there. And so, yeah, and then we, you know, those guys are spelled on offense. So, you know, we try to, as much as possible, you know, get 22 guys out there on Friday night, and the guys that need to be going both ways and that are most dangerous, you know, most effective, we'll get them as many reps as we can on offense. But, yeah, you said it. And we're playing fast right now, which I really like. So we'll see how it plays out here.
Coach, I want you to finish this sentence. It can be a special season at Bishop Winger if...
we win the trenches.
Wow, that was quick. It's like you prepared.
I thought just the way it is.
I thought I could save your guys about 10 more minutes.
You know, it all starts right there in the game of football. Yeah. Especially when you get in the postseason, you got to be able to run the ball.
I thought I could save your guys 10 more minutes without you.
I let them know you gave me an easy one.
I threw you a softball. I thought I was throwing one out there that would make you think a little bit. It's like you were all prepared. Well, Coach, good luck this season. Scrimmage, Carroll, is it this year? Again this year?
Yeah, we're heading over to Carroll Friday night, 7 o'clock, yep.
Okay, well, good luck with that. Good luck with staying healthy, and I'm sure we'll talk to you plenty during the season.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks for all the coverage.
Yep, thanks for joining us, Coach. That is Coach Jason Garrett, who's joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. You've got it locked in with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Coming up at hour number two, we welcome the judge, Phil Hauck, to the program at 520 to talk some Notre Dame football. Also, we've got the harp music. I don't think we've gotten anybody who has named our eight harp songs in order. We'll have to play that again coming up here in just a little bit. Right now, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the Indy Star, it is Colts beat reporter Nate Adkins. Good afternoon, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you join us. Colts seem to be wearing out the pads. They've got them on. They're playing with the pads on. Have you noticed that the Colts seem to be taking a little more aggressive approach with the contact and with the preseason, especially with this nine straight opening game losses kind of looming over their heads?
Well, that's how they described it so far when we've gotten to talk to Frank Reich about kind of the tone and the tempo of this practice and his plans for the preseason, is that seemed to be a conversation that they've had about trying to find a way to eliminate the slow starts, always losing in week one. And just like last year, they got off to an 0-3 start. And there's just so many different reasons for it, but they think one possible solution is just ramping the temperature up just a little bit more this time of year. It's one change they've made. They've also moved practice back 2 hours from what it used to be. So now they practice at noon, which they think is going to get them on more of a circadian rhythm for regular season games that are often at 1 o'clock. So we'll see how much of an effect that ultimately has, but it's at least something they're trying because, like you said, they've just found a way to lose the opener just about every single year. And this year, with it being one of their two games against the Texans, who shouldn't be very good, it's a start they don't want to get off to. So they're trying whatever they can.
Yeah, and then they follow that up with a trip to Jacksonville. Has Frank Reich given an indication at this point what to expect as far as the amount of time with the first unit?
Yeah, he said that they should be playing around a quarter on this first game, which is a little bit more than I think you would normally expect. He didn't guarantee that everyone would play. And so as you look around, I mean, there's certain guys you could certainly imagine needing this time of year less than others, guys like Jonathan Taylor and DeForest Buckner and Yannick Ngakoue and Stephon Gilmore. Those players that kind of have very solidified roles and who don't need to maybe build chemistry as much with other players, they might get time off. We haven't been promised on any of that. So it'll be interesting, though, because they've had a pretty smooth camp as far as staying healthy, much unlike last year. But as we know, that's one of those things that can change on a dime, and we'll see how it goes in preseason. But they do want to get them some action and some looks, especially since they're changing the defensive scheme, since they have a new quarterback, just to make sure they know what they have before they move forward.
Nick Cross going to get a start at safety? Is he going to beat out Rodney McLeod?
I mean, that's how it's gone for the most part so far. They are rotating those two, and I expect that's probably going to continue until they feel like Nick Cross is fully ready to have training wheels off. You know, right now they're looking at Rodney McLeod as he's the one guy who can play free and strong safety. So if there was any injury to Julian Blackman, they want to have him able to go there. But Nick Cross has been good in camp. He's not really making mental mistakes. You're seeing some of the explosion, some of the ball skills flash at times. He doesn't yet have Rodney McLeod sort of, you know, maybe his vocal leadership role, which is important at that strong safety spot. So it's still something he's trying to earn full time, but I do think he'll get the first crack at it.
I know one thing that has been a point of emphasis for Chris Ballard is trying to get depth on the football team. And so I started to look around at the key players and think, okay, who's the Colt that if you had to pick one that you'd say the Colts are dead if this guy ends up getting hurt? Because they do have Nick Foles, so I can't, it's not exactly just automatically the quarterback, is it? Who would it be if you said one guy Colts could not survive without or would seriously hamper their season? Who do you think it would be?
Yeah, if we're talking the entire season, I do think that's where you'd have to talk quarterback because that represents your ultimate ceiling. But outside of that, if we're even talking like even a game or two at a time, I think wide receiver, if they lose Michael Pittman Jr., it is just really hard to imagine this team having consistency and having explosion at that position without him out there. So you've been here through camp. You've been charting the reps that the offense has taken, and Matt Ryan is targeting and completing passes of Michael Pittman Jr. at more than double the rate of any other receiver. You know, and there's just not a guy who is trained and that skilled on the outside to work kind of across the middle and down the field. The other guys they have just haven't played a lot of football, not in the NFL level. Paris Campbell's played 15 career games. Alec Pierce is a rookie. You know, everyone else in that room is young and inexperienced, and they just don't also have the developed physical skills to beat someone like a Stephon Gilmore, which Michael Pittman Jr. has done, and pretty much no one else on this team has done so far. So in a passing league, and especially, you know, with an aging quarterback with Matt Ryan, who's capable, but he's not just going to maybe will everyone to success at this stage in his career. They've got to have Michael Pittman Jr. out there to give them some of that vertical explosive element, because it can't all come from the run game, because we saw last year when it has come from the run game, that kind of ends up running out over time.
Is when you look at the Colts and you look at like Michael Pittman and then look at the rest of the wide receivers, obviously there appears to be a bit of a decline. You've got some unproven guys. Let's put it that way. There may be some potential, but they might be unproven. Paris Campbell, still unproven. Alec Pierce, rookie. Naeem Hines, who knows where he will line up. More of a running back. So it's a little unproven once you get away from Michael Pittman Jr. So I guess my question is it still on the table, the possibility of signing a wide receiver to the roster?
Yeah, it's definitely on the table. They've been in talks with T.Y. Hilton ever since the spring when T.Y. indicated he wanted to come back and play football again in the right situation. It hasn't happened yet, so what that tells me is that they want to give a chance to some of these guys who, like you said, have some upside but have not proven it. They want to give them the chance to go out here and prove it, because they do think that there is a potential really good player in Paris Campbell if he can stay healthy. There's, you know, size and speed in other guys like Ashton Doolin and Desmond Patman and Michael Strawn, who has not been able to get out here. And they want to see what Reggie Wayne could do with some of those. But as we've gone on through camp here, and it's August 10th now, it's consistently these guys who are not Pittman have had trouble getting open and catching the ball when they are open, which is a problem. So, we're still 4.5 weeks off the first game, so I think they're going to give it some more time. But it's one of those where at some point they've got to feel like they have enough, or I do think they're going to pull that lever with someone like T.Y. Hilton. Possibly maybe there's somebody else out there that they also like. I don't know the full list they're looking at. But it has to be something they're considering, because this team's really built and pretty proven and experienced at most positions. They're trying to go for it this year. The one where you definitely can see those issues forming is really all the pass catchers outside of Michael Pittman Jr. in this league. You have to find a way to get that. So I definitely think that's something they have to look at, and they are looking at to some level, but we'll see to actually pull the trigger.
You know, is there anything obvious about a Gus Bradley defense that you're seeing? And I'd say it's different from the past, but it's hard for you to gauge. But is there something about the Gus Bradley defense that stands out to you? Something that this defensive unit is doing, and how good can they be?
I think the biggest change that everyone's talking about that you can also see is just kind of how free and downhill the defensive line plays. So Gus Bradley runs, you know, a 4-3 defense, which is like what Matt Eberflus ran. But the big difference is Matt Eberflus's defensive line really did a lot of read and react. He loved defensive ends to be run stuffers, gap control guys. So, you know, he loved Al-Kadeem Muhammad for that reason. And it did help the run defense, but it did not. It made it harder for athletes to get on the field at those positions out wide. And so right now, everything they do is attacking, where the way that they play on the defensive line is they're just getting after the quarterback nonstop and almost playing the run while they're doing that. So if they see a handoff, they're trying to make the tackle there, or they're trying to recover. They're willing to take some risks on handoffs to just consistently get after the quarterback. And it's just allowing some guys to play more free than they have. DeForest Buckner has had just an incredible camp. Anytime he gets a one-on-one matchup, he is just destroying the opposition. He loves this scheme. It's what he played in San Francisco his first year in the league. Yannick Ngakoue loves this scheme. That's why he's here, and he's able to fire off the ball and look so good on the outside. So we'll see if it ends up costing them in the run defense, if that ends up mattering. But right now people are just kind of raving at how free and athletic the defensive line is able to play right now. And I think that pass rush is something they had to get much better at from last year. Adding Ngakoue helps, but I think the scheme could also help them too.
Let's look at the other side of the football, the offensive line, because I think the question mark is at left tackle. How close is the competition between Matt Pryor and Bernard Raimann?
I don't think it's super close at this moment, because you got to understand Bernard Raimann showed up here, and he's only played offensive tackle for 2 seasons. And those 2 seasons included one that was in a pandemic. That's how he ended up learning on YouTube and just kind of watching guys that way. And then he played sort of limited amounts of football in the COVID season and played in the Mid-American Conference. And that's a huge difference than coming out here and trying to block Yannick Ngakoue and Kwity Paye and guys like that. So Matt Pryor is just ahead in terms of just the experience he has, the feel for it, and just kind of how developed his body is. Of course, there's so much different because Pryor is he's at 343 pounds. He's the biggest player on this football team. So stylistically, they're different. And Ryman's just trying to learn right now. So they're trying to give him the patience to develop, to learn football, to not feel the pressure to play right away, which, of course, puts pressure on Matt Pryor to be good enough day one to make that happen. So far, it's looked that way, but we'll see how it continues into the regular season. But I fully expect Pryor to get that first crack, and if he loses it, it'll be because he wasn't good enough, and Ryman's kind of there in the waiting.
Any stories buzzing around camp about Quentin Nelson and an extension?
Not so far. We're going to actually talk to Quentin Nelson tomorrow. He does not tend to open up a lot on that or anything else, so I'll be surprised if anything really comes out about that tomorrow. I mean, Chris Ballard told us the first day we were here that there's no doubt he wants Quentin Nelson to be here. He's always taken that stance. And Nelson, you know, he loves playing with Ryan Kelly, and he likes to sit here. So it's always been expected that two sides are going to get together and try and make it happen. But, of course, these things, there's a process to them, and there's different levers they're both going to try and play, and then they're going to try and figure out what the monetary value is on that, because guards have had a ceiling on them for the most part. Quentin Nelson is, you know, arguably the best guard out there, so he's going to try and push the ceiling on some of those financial levels, and we'll see where they kind of end up. But there's no real way to tell if that deal is going to come, you know, this month, or if it may even have to wait until after the season.
Nate, always great stuff. Appreciate you jumping on with us. We'll talk to you again.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Yep, that's Nate Atkins from the Indy Star joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush. threw this out there earlier. I want you to listen to this montage of Heart music, because this was my concert the other night, except I listened to full versions of the songs. These are just quick hooks, so it goes through pretty quickly. There's 8 songs, and I've got a large pizza to Pizza Hut to anybody that can text us at 46862, the 8 songs in this montage. So go ahead, Caleb. Here comes Heart. There you go, 8 songs from Heart, most underrated band of the 1980s. If you know those 8 songs, can give us the titles in order. We'll get you a large pizza to Pizza Hut on this Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush. Still coming up, hour number 2, we'll talk Notre Dame football. They count down to that huge opener against the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Horseshoe in Columbus. It's going to be the national stage because it will be College game day. It will be the atmosphere for the Labor Day weekend will be in Columbus. That is huge, especially with Marcus Freeman and all his Ohio State ties and the debut of a regular season head coaching job at Notre Dame for Marcus Freeman. So this will be a huge, huge game on September 3rd. And we'll talk to Phil Hauck about what are the question marks that surround Notre Dame, even at this point, as they get set to start the official. I know Marcus Freeman coached the team in the bowl game, but that, you know, to me, that doesn't count because you don't have time to implement your own system. I don't feel like it's your guys. I think this is really the start of the Marcus Freeman era in Notre Dame. But the Judge Phil Hauck, host of Fighting Irish Preview, will join us coming up at 5:20. It is all part of a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush. Coming back after 5, taking you home on a Wednesday on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.